This episode is supported by Active Skin Repair. Active Skin Repair is a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. I just randomly, Vinny was having a toe skin irritation issue, and he ended up having this like skin that was really irritating him, and it was getting kind of like icky, and you know, like when kids start to get like little scabs and scratches and then they want to pick at it, and it was getting worse. And so Active Skin Repair showed up on my doorstep as a result of the sponsorship, and I got to put it to use immediately. And I got the ointment formula, or the like ointment formulation, and then also the spray, and the spray was perfect. So Vinny does not like ointmenty, creamy, lotiony things on his body, but I was able to get out the spray, literally took it out of the packaging the day it arrived, put it on his toe before he went to bed. And the next morning he was like, "Mom, my toe's all better." It was literally like this super amazing cure that helped his toes so quickly. So you can use Active Skin Repair on a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburns, rashes, other types of skin damage. It's totally safe, non-toxic, suitable on all types of skin, even parts of the body where you might have rosacea or eczema or have acne-prone skin. This is also safe for the youngest members of your family up to the oldest. So now you have one simple solution for your family's skin health needs. With over 500,000 happy customers and thousands of five-star reviews and super safe and clean ingredients, Active Skin Repair is something that you want to have on hand for your family. So to get your own Active Skin Repair, go to activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order when you use the code SHAMELESS. That's activeskinrepair.com. Use the code SHAMELESS for 20% off your order. activeskinrepair.com, code SHAMELESS. This is the Shameless Mom Academy, episode 859, with returning guest, Dr. Amy Porto. Show notes for this episode, including any links mentioned in the episode, can be found by going to shamelessmom.com and clicking on episode 859. Welcome to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm your host, Sarah Dean. I'm here to give you and other passionate, driven, unapologetic moms tools, resources, and a little bit of humor to help you lead more positive, powerful, and purposeful lives every damn day. One of the best things about the Shameless Mom Academy is our community, so be sure to join us in our free private Facebook group to connect with other shameless moms just like you. You can find us over at shamelessmom.com/Facebook. All right, let's dive into today's episode. Oh, mamas, I'm so excited to have Dr. Amy Porto back on the show. Amy, I believe, is the only dietitian I follow online. I was thinking this through as I was typing up notes today, and I was like, I don't think I follow anyone else, because seriously, I don't trust really anyone who talks about food on the internet. I can't, or on social media, I guess I should say. But Dr. Amy Porto, I came to her through some mutual connections on Instagram a few years ago. I love what she says. I love what she stands for. She's been on another episode, which I will link to in the show notes. And we've talked about all sorts of really fascinating things around nutrition and like myths and truths about nutrition and how we get caught up in all these like cultural lies, I guess, about nutrition. And what I wanted to have her talk about today was something a little bit different and something that I've been thinking about a lot, which we dig into kind of where this thought process started for me in the interview. But Dr. Amy posted something on Instagram a while ago about kind of alluding to like elitism with food. And I immediately messaged her and was like, oh my gosh, can we please do an episode about this? Because it's something I've been wanting to talk about, but needed like the right person to talk about it with. And I knew that she was the right person. I just hadn't gotten around to asking her about it. So when she made this post, I was like, oh, this is it. This is like, Amy is telling me she needs to come back on the show and I will invite her right now. So here we are. We're having this conversation. I'm so excited. I'm also really excited because when I reached out to Amy and I said, hey, I would love to have you back on the show. And if you have anything going on that you want to promote, you know, come let me know. And she's like, oh my gosh, I do have something. I am actually starting off a membership, a nutrition membership. And again, like I don't recommend nutrition stuff to people because I don't follow nutrition people online, but I do recommend Dr. Amy Porto. So listen to this interview, of course, but also know that Dr. Amy's membership is open right now for enrollment and you can join her membership. It's called the Eat Better Club. And enrollment is open for a limited time. So if you go to Amy Porto, AmyPorto.com/links, LINKS, you can pop over and join her membership community. That'll be linked up in the show notes as well. But I just wanted to get that out right away because I know that her enrollment is open for a limited time. And she was so excited to come on the show and talk about what we were talking about. So I was like, I'm so excited to talk about what you have to offer people. I'm always excited when I can send people in the direction of people who I really trust, who have shared values. So for those of you who haven't heard me talk about Dr. Amy Pardo before, she is an anti-diet registered dietitian, nutrition professor, and certified intuitive eating counselor. As an expert in her field with over 20 years of experience, Dr. Pardo speaks the truth about nutrition. Her purpose is to disrupt mainstream diet culture with real science, a dash of humor, and a little bit of common sense. And while she holds a BS in biochemistry and a PhD in nutrition science, she believes you shouldn't need a PhD to decode food labels at the grocery store. Breaking down complex information about food and nutrition into digestible, bite-sized pieces of information is her passion. Plus, she loves a good pun. Amy's ultimate goal is to help you trust your body and reclaim your relationship with food. And she does such a beautiful job doing her work. Amy's been on the show, I've interviewed her twice. We've had conversations like on Instagram, we DM each other from time to time. And I've come to the conclusion after the second conversation that maybe in some version of the future, we need to do a podcast together, like the Amy and Sarah show. I don't know. I'm just putting it out there. I also know she's going to listen to this. So I'm just putting it out there just in case. I don't know what it would look like. It would just be so much fun. Like, she has the science. I have the opinions. I feel like we could make some magic together. So with all that said, listen in to Amy share what food elitism is and how it shows up in society, the dangers of putting food in a hierarchy, why the Dirty Dozen food list is not worth your worry, why food language matters so much when we speak about food and the dangers of labeling foods as bad, trash, fake food, junk food, clean food, etc. Like all the food labeling that categorizes it on a spectrum of morality or as garbage and trash, it's no good for anyone. She also talks about how food elitism contributes to discrimination toward people who are food insecure, her thoughts on healthism and the morality of health. And I love it when she talks about this stuff. So good. She then digs into how our judgments around food are whitewashed and part of supremacy culture, how you can start to unfold your own biases around food, nutrition, and health, and why you should avoid health and wellness practitioners who weaponize fear to sell their services and products to you. This is a meaty episode. It's fun. It's deep. I think we talk about things that you probably haven't heard framed in the way that we talk about them. So I think you're going to learn a few things. I, from here, want you to go ahead and listen to this episode, take some notes, and then definitely go check out Amy's membership community over at amypardo.com/links. So with all that said, please join me in welcoming Dr. Amy Pardo back to the Shameless Mom Academy. Amy, welcome back to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm so excited to have you here.
And I'm really happy to have the invitation to come back. Thanks so much for asking.
Well, all it took was you posting one thing on Instagram. And I was like, will you come back on the show and we can talk about this?
Yeah. And we had so much fun the last time. I was like, absolutely. Yes. And when can we do it?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So the thing that you posted on Instagram was about elitism in food. And so we're going to dig into that today. And the thing that attracted me to that was this situation that's come up since my husband's been laid off, where I've been like checking my own elitism around food. So we'll dig into all of that. But before we do that, can you fill us in a little bit, filling in the gaps from the last time when you were here, about the dynamics of your personal and professional life beyond your bio and anything you're particularly excited about right now?
Yeah, I have to think about what was going on the last time I was here and how have things changed. I remember the last time that we talked, it was at the top of a year and we were talking about the word of the year, you know? And it was funny, soon after our interview, I actually changed my word of the year, which is kind of funny. But what I have, I was never been one of those people who've had one of those word of the years, but I leaned into that heavy last year and it really lined up for me really well. And so I've kind of done that a little bit this year as well. And the word that I chose for this year, I know we're well into 2024, was priority. And I kind of played with different things and I leaned into that because I see that just when you're talking about personal and professional life, on how that shows up and what are the things that I really want to make a priority especially as I'm nearing 50 this year, in my personal life, in my professional life, and what do you want to say yes to, and what do you want to, can you put all your energy towards? Because I, you know, you get so many, if you're like me, you have so many interests in so many things, and you want to do so many things, and so where can you land that? And so some things that I'm, you know, involved in right now that are making me excited about doing things. One is something stepping out of a box for me. I've been involved most recently with the American Heart Association's Go Red for Women campaign, which has been a really interesting thing. When someone asked me to be a part of that in their kind of Women of Impact, I had this full-bodied yes moment. Like, this is a great idea. I really see this connection. And my doctoral work was in cardiovascular nutrition. And like, what a great connection. This is great. And then I thought, oh, wait, what have I gotten myself into? You know, what does this mean? Mm-hmm. And it really, that word priority came up again, because I thought, what a great, you know, not great message, but an important message for women. I was finding for myself, you know, in midlife, so many things where we are so busy. You know, you're raising kids, but also taking care of aging parents, and you're in leadership positions in your job and in your community, and all of these things where many times, you know, we're not just last on our list, we're not even on our list. It's kind of like the bare minimum. And so really like leaning into the education piece of, you know, what are the, when was the last time you just knew like your cholesterol levels and your blood pressure and all of those kind of things? Because I felt that for myself. And so it's an interesting thing to lead off with you asking about this, because we're going to be talking about like food elitism. And I'm also talking about like prioritizing health for myself, that I'm making that a priority and trying to make that a message. And I think there's some nuance there. So that's been exciting. And in my business, something that I've been cooking up, pun intended, I guess, as a dietitian, that I'm excited about is launching a membership group. And I've really been, it's kind of been something on the back burner for me for a while, where I, you know, I've been working a lot with one-on-one clients. And I had this moment where I thought, you know, if this client who like lived in Florida could meet this client who lives in Texas, they would be such good friends. You know, like I could just see that bonding. And also because, especially in, you know, if we've had a history of dieting, I think so many of our stories are the same, but yet we think we are the only person with that story.
Totally.
And there's so much shame and, you know, quote unquote failure that you feel if you've done all these things and only you have been the person who has gone to the Weight Watchers meeting with your mother. It could have only been you.
That was exactly the example I was just going
to
use.
Yeah, see this, and this is every person I have talked to between like 40 and mid 50s all have that experience, and they all think it was like only their mother who did that. And I was like, no, I learned the ketchup recipe too as a small child, you know? And so we have these similar experiences, but we don't necessarily have a space to do that. And so I wanted to create a space for those of us who ate the whole box of Snackwell cookies and thought that was fine because they were fat free, which meant they were calorie free. Like, we have this shared experience, but yet a very different lived experience. And being able to know that we're trying to break free from all that diet culture noise, but also still trying to figure out like what headline is worth going through and still wanting to be caring for our bodies and knowing and how to sift through some of that information. So I'm excited to get that kicked off. Maybe by the time listeners are hearing this, we might be in that process of having people join what I'm calling the Eat Better Club. So,
ooh, the Eat Better Club. I love it. And yes, we'll definitely link everything up in the show notes so that people can tap right or click right through to access that. So I wanted to, when you were talking about the membership community, I wanted to mention what happened in our membership community. So we started a membership community for the Shameless Mom Academy, probably like a year and a half after I launched the show. And I thought it would be a place for me to come share things with them, which was totally like part of it. But what I didn't understand was how intimately they would all get to know each other. Yeah. And after, I think it was after a year or so, they started asking, we would did weekly calls at that time. And they started asking like, well, when are we all going to meet each other? And I would just kind of blow it off like, well, that's not my responsibility. I just kind of kept saying like, oh, that would be so fun someday. Like when, you know, someday down the road when like, I don't have to facilitate like bringing all these people together, because that seemed really hard and quite expensive. And like, where do you start? And, but then we had a woman, one of our members, Samantha, at one point was like, no, really, like unmuted herself on a Zoom call. Like, no, really, we've been talking about it like behind the scenes. And like, we really do want to know, like, when are you going to have us It's like, okay. But we ended up bringing people together. We did this in-person event. It was absolutely phenomenal. But what happened in that group, and some of it came from them being in person, but a lot of it came from just being in this community online, was that friendships were formed and
Yeah.
like lifelong. I can't believe I get messages still from people from the early days of that community who are like, hey, like I left the membership after a year, but I still talk to one of those moms every single day. Or like our families vacation together. I mean,
Yeah.
incredible relationships because of those shared experiences and being like in this pl same place at the same time. So that's what you have to look forward to.
Yeah, and as you're saying this, I'm like bubbling up because that is exactly the hope. And it's coming out of some of those examples that you gave, because I have been in communities like that, you know, in
Yeah.
entrepreneurial spaces and other spaces where I have met people who have become really close friends, you know, that I
Yeah.
wouldn't have known otherwise. And that is my hope. But I kind of do have the hope to have people meet in person too. I think that would be
Oh,
a lot
it's
of
so
fun.
fun. I mean, once I ripped the Band-Aid off, I was like, how can we do this
Yeah.
all the time? But it was so over. At first, I was like, do I have to rent a ballroom? Like, I did not
Right.
even know. Like, I'm
Right.
like, where do
Oh,
we start?
where I want, yeah, let me just put this out in the universe. I would love to like take a trip, like go, you know, because I have
Yeah.
such a food focus. Like, let's go someplace and eat the food and, you
Yes,
know,
I
be in
love
the
that.
culture and experience all of those things together. But to your original question, so that's kind of the thing that's my priority in my business right
I
now, is
love
putting a
it.
lot of my energy into what that's going to look like.
Oh, I love it. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna dig into what prompted me to reach out after your Instagram post. And I love, like, I don't watch very many people's. I'm in like in and out of Instagram stories, but I feel like when I see things, I'm like, that's the thing I was meant to see today. So when I saw your story, you made a comment, and I don't remember the full context, but it was around elitism related to food and what gets missed, and also like, where's the harm when this classism and elitism around food then prevents people from feeling like they can make healthy choices. And then it also ties into diet culture. And there's like all these layers to it. So how this showed up for me in recent months, my husband was laid off in June. We're recording this in February. He still has not found full-time work. And so it's been a journey. And I was raised by a coupon clipper. Like my mom, to this day, like I have this coupon for 10 cents for a can of beans, 10 cents off a can of beans. And I will drive 40 minutes outside of town to save my 10 cents on the can of black beans. And so I'm raised by this mom who used to send me coupons all the time. I remember in college, she would send me coupons for tampons.
Oh.
And I refused to use them. I thought it was so
Right.
embarrassing.
Right, not only do you have to buy the tampons, but now you have to show the
Yes, and that
coupon for the
exactly. I'm like,
tampons,
yes, it's like the transaction's going to take way too long. Like
right? Yes.
someone will for sure see me.
Right.
So I have never been someone who's been a coupon clipper. Well, then my husband gets laid off and I'm suddenly like standing in the grocery store noticing also someone who like buys organic because I think that that's what responsible moms and quote unquote good moms are supposed to do. And I'm suddenly noticing the difference of pricing for like organic versus non-organic and all these different things. And suddenly like anywhere where I could save a buck, I was like, oh, like a dollar here and a dollar there. Like I'm pretty quickly up to saving like $20 a grocery trip. And then also like, I'm not going to have it delivered via Instacart. I'm going to do the pickup and that's going to save me like another $30. And all of a sudden our grocery bills are going down and down. And I was thinking how elitist I was before when I would have these thoughts around like someone getting meat that's on sale that's not organic. And or not organic milk, and literally having thoughts like, do you even love your kid? And that's like so extreme, but like you have a growing child, and shouldn't you be more responsible than to give them non-organic meat or milk? And I've caught myself and realized that's so gross. It's so snotty. I don't want to be that person, but I had that in me and seeing that side of myself. And like the do you really love your child thing is like, you know, it's a sarcasm, but
Yes, yeah.
that judgment was there. And so recognizing that in myself and then realizing how it's shown up over time, how it shows up across culture and society, across like our education programs, across school. I'm thinking like, how does this show up with conversations that moms are having at sports games and just like in all these different contexts? So that's what I wanted to talk about was this elitism around food. And I would love to know what you see around this because we live in different parts of the country and we are working with different people. You're in academia and I'm deep in mom land. How do you see food elitism showing up? And then what do you think it, how do you think it, what do you think it does to our community and our society?
Wow, that was a big. I felt like, well, this is a small topic now.
I
The way that you have
know,
led
I
it,
know.
it's a small. Well, just it's a small
We'll
topic,
just really quickly do this.
but it. It, but in defense of you, and I will say this, probably five times before we're done here chatting, is outside of all of the things we're going to talk about, people should spend their money how they want to. So if you have disposable income and you want to spend it on food at a particular level, you should do that, and there's nothing that doesn't necessarily, I think, make anything elitist in that way. Like, people spend their money on a more expensive purse than something else, or a pair of shoes, or on their organic meat, right? If you have disposable income, you do you, and do what you want with it. But from this perspective, I think just as a nutrition professional, as a dietitian, leading with, the perspective of thinking about people having access to food is a number one thing. And thinking about, fed is best overall is an important part. And that is not, the person who is at the grocery store feeding their family are not thinking about all of those. They're thinking about how they're going to, purchase things for their home. So I know the perspective is different, but the messaging can be really harmful when we put food on a hierarchy, particularly when we put food on a hierarchy that it doesn't even warrant, that it's not even deserved, that we don't have science behind, that there really isn't a benefit to doing, X over Y type of things, because that messaging does get internalized. And so when we make particular choices, we feel like a good person because we're doing this. And I know you're saying that in sarcasm, but also, like, I'm a better mom because I'm making these choices for my family, which is like a different, it is so nuanced. It's a different thing than being like, I want to make the best choices for my family, which makes a lot of sense, versus I am better than because I am making these choices. So it's that kind of distinction. There's nothing wrong, I think, with, doing what you want to do to feed your family with whatever that looks like. But I have, I'm trying to think of maybe what was the post that eventually made you think about this. And it probably was something. My re more recent rants have been around, like, the language of processed foods. And, dietitians will give messages, and health professionals have messages about, like, eat more fruits and vegetables. I think for all of the things that people disagree about food on, we can all pretty much agree on that. Well, no, we can't. No, we can't, because there's the people that, oh, I'm sorry, right? We can't agree on that. Let me go back. There's some guy on TikTok somewhere, probably more of them, that are going to talk about don't eat this vegetable because of the oxalates and some other nonsense. Right. Yeah. So we have lost our minds. We
has
actually,
methyl something in
right. We only eat meat and salt, and that's it, because we're men, because we can't
it.
get any more masculine than if we just eat. But that is, I'm not even making that up. That actually is a thing. So I should have to be careful. We can't all agree on eating fruits and vegetables. But when that message comes out, like, in my view as a dietitian, that means all of it. That means canned. And that means fresh, and that means frozen, and that means organic, and that means non-organic, and it means the starchy ones, and it means the genetically modified ones, and it means the one on that dirty dozen list that doesn't mean anything. And it means, the nightshades that we're afraid of, and it means the ones that have the oxalates that the bros in the grocery store are talking about. Like, it means all of that. And you can make choices within those categories for yourself, but when you have distinctions there, where we have gotten to a level where we are elevating some basic foods like fruits and vegetables, and some of them are better than or less than based on how they show up, I mean, that is just diet culture showing right up. I mean, we have stunk to a level where the produce that you choose is a status symbol.
And we're going to connect this to diet culture in a minute because that's on my list for sure. But yes, food is a status symbol. I really appreciate that. And I think that that piece is really important. This episode is supported by AquaTrue. Having clean, safe water is the last thing you want to worry about. But unfortunately, according to extensive research by the Environmental Working Group, 3 out of 4, yes, 3 out of 4 homes in America have harmful contaminants in their tap water. So that's why you got to check out AquaTrue. AquaTrue purifiers have a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers, which is what we have, take no installation or plumbing, and they remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. And they're specifically designed to combat chemicals like PFAS, which can lead to potentially adverse health effects like cancer, endocrine system disruption, and liver toxicity, which is part of what makes AquaTrue so special, unique, and important in terms of how they are able to filter water. They also have water purifiers to fit every type of home. So like the installation-free countertop purifier that we have at our house to higher capacity under sink options. They even have Wi-Fi connected purifiers and mineral boost options. So I'm so excited about our new AquaTrue. And here's the thing. I swear it's like a gentle reminder to actually drink more water every time you walk into your kitchen. So we are drinking more water now and also more clean water. So more water that is more clean. It feels like a double win. I'm feeling pretty impressed with us. I feel like sink water, tap water becomes invisible at a certain point. And when I see the purifier on my counter, it's like many time a day reminder to like, keep drinking, keep drinking. So I want you to check out AquaTrue for yourself and for your family. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money back guarantee, and that makes it a great gift as well. Today, my listeners can receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter the code Shameless at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use the code Shameless, S-H-A-M-E-L-E-S-S. AquaTrue.com, code Shameless. This episode is supported by a podcast I want to share with you called Understood Explains. So this show is about navigating ADHD, dyslexia, and other learning and thinking differences, which can be so confusing. And so every season of the show is around a different theme. So there's a season on special education, there's a season on ADHD diagnosis for adults, and the current season is all about IEPs. I love this podcast because the episodes are 10 to 15 minutes long. So if you are short on time or short on focus, you can take this content in super quickly, easily. It's very digestible. And the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert, Juliana Urtube. So Juliana talks all about how to navigate educational plans, IEPs. She talks about the differences between IEPs and 504 plans. She really breaks things down in a really clear and simple way so that you have some of those questions that you might be thinking around, like, does this pertain to my child? Is this something I need to be looking into? Like, where do we go from here? Where do I go if I have questions? Juliana has you covered. She explains so many different things and so many different little pieces and nuance of IEPs and special education and different things on Understood Explains. So I want you to go check it out wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can go listen to Understood Explains. Just go into your podcast app, do a search for Understood Explains, and it will pop right up. Click on it, pick your episode, and get the answers that you've been looking for and the support that you need around different learning differences and differences in school. As part of this situation with my husband, I've, you know, been analyzing our buying habits around berries. Berries are not cheap.
No, they are not.
Organic berries are really not cheap. And but my child will eat a lot of berries, and he is a growing boy who is very picky about many things. So I'm like, if he's going to eat the berries, I'm going to get the berries. So I was picking between like $8 organic raspberries and $5 non-organic raspberries recently. And I, of course, I'm like, oh, but the Dirty Dozen. And the Dirty Dozen say that you shouldn't for berries. Like, it's really important. And the amount of time and energy I spent standing in front of the fridge case at the store, like, oh, should I spend like $3 more to get the organic? Like, I mean, this is my kid, and but like $3, and I don't want to obsess over $3. And we're not in a place where like $3 is going to make or break our livelihood. Mm-hmm. And also, there are people where that $3 goes a really long way, and that is really significant. Yeah. And I think when we talk about food in certain ways, that we are overlooking and really ignoring and excluding people who literally cannot buy the food because everything is so expensive, because access has gotten so incredibly difficult. So like, if you can get the 89 cent can of canned peas, that is still nutrition.
Yeah. And I have to sit on a moment. I know this is not the question you asked me, but I feel it's a professional responsibility now, even though I won't sound like a professional when I say it, to say that the Dirty Dozen list is trash. It is absolute trash.
I've seen you post about it before.
So that's one of my rantable moments. The Environmental Working Group is a lobbyist agency for the organic industry. And so, not to get into all of the science of the way that they do things, but it doesn't even make sense. You know, like, even if you're not a scientist, the logic of it's really based more so on like the number of pesticides being used and not necessarily like the concentration of any of them. And so there's a great website I hope I get this correct. I think it's safe fruits and veggies. We'll check and we'll update it in the show notes if I have it wrong. Where you
Okay.
can actually go in and do, I do this as an experiment in class to see, like, if you look at levels of the most like dangerous quote unquote pesticide that would be used on a strawberry, which always gets to be number one on the list, and see even if you ate that at the max capacity, like if they went way out and used as much as is legally possible. And you were eating that, you would have to eat as like an average sized adult 454 servings of berries a day for your entire lifetime for this to be a problem. You
Oh my
know,
gosh,
so
you just saved so many people millions of dollars.
now, but also to be fair, some people I'd be like, yeah, but I don't want any risk. I want
Sure.
zero risk. And again, that's your prerogative. Then do that.
Right.
But I love berries, but I am not eating 450 servings of berries a day until I die, where
Yeah.
that's going to be a problem. And so we kind of go through this whole calculation in class to see, and it just feels wrong, like to have a group come out and like elevate some fruits and vegetables and then
Right.
vilify other ones. Like, yeah.
It's the Dairy Council. Like, make sure you're getting 5 servings of dairy a day. My son probably gets 3 servings of dairy a week.
Yeah.
It's on a good week because he is not a kid that I can get dairy into. And I'm like, oh my God, are his bones going to break? Everything turns around. So far, no broken bones. But it's interesting. And dairy is, there's all sorts of important things around dairy. I'm not
Right.
trying to dismiss the value of dairy,
Right. No, I get what
but
you're
the
saying.
Dairy Council is very invested in making you think that your child, especially your growing child, needs all of these servings of dairy, and they are helping fund the food pyramid that also suggests all this. So I appreciate your point around like who's paying for the creation of this
Other
media
thing.
coverage?
Yeah. And I think that gets lost where there's a certain type of messaging that gets really vilified, but the
Yeah.
counter messaging people don't look into. So if you have concerns about, you know, big pharma and big agriculture and big food, but you don't also see that most of the companies that have like all of the ownership in the big areas, like a General Mills and a Kellogg's and those large companies, they own all the organic companies. It is the
Right.
same. It is consumer choice. You know, I like to give the example of Coca-Cola does not care if you stop drinking Coca-Cola if they can sell you Dasani water
Totally. Yeah.
and charge you twice as much.
Right.
So it doesn't matter to them. You want to put a tax on soda? That's fine. We will sell you this water and we'll increase the price. So then they make money either way. And so
Right.
there's also that in industry that for every processed cereal that's full of sugar, there's also the organic variety, and they're all owned under the same umbrella. So there's an interest there in both of those things, and that
Yeah.
gets lost along the way.
Yeah. Thank you for your distinction between, people who want to invest money in certain ways and spend their
Yeah.
money, their disposable income on organic or not or whatever, and buy at Trader Joe's or Whole Foods or wherever. Because yes, absolutely, like people should definitely do what is right for them. But when we get to this point of judgment or elitism around food, then what are the dangers at that we start to come into?
One of the things that is important to me, and I, as I'm always hesitant to say it because after I say it, I'll be like, oh, I'm going to mess up after I do it, is
Yeah.
the value of the language that we use, that
Ah,
the words
yeah.
that we use around food really matter. And I try to catch myself a lot because I don't always get it right. But when we label food a particular way, then, you know, that gets extended into, we do it to ourselves all the time. And so if we do it to ourselves, we do it to others when we say things like, well, I'm going to be good tonight and have the salad. You
Yeah.
know, or I was so bad this weekend with what I ate. We moralize those things about ourselves. And so that extends to things when we call food, you know, this is garbage food, this is
Yeah.
trash. It's even
Junk
just
food.
junk food, which we
Yeah.
all talk about, or food is clean, which then implies that other food is dirty, like, or it's fake food or not real food. Or, you know, what does that mean? Because when you stand back from that, it's difficult to look at for ourselves, you know, and how we do judgments, because we're all swimming in this sea where we get this messaging. You know, we're not
Right.
immune from it. But when you think about things like, you know, who was the picture of a person who comes into your mind who eats junk food or goes to get fast food or eats fake food or eats clean food? You know, what's the image that comes to mind? And when you talk about, you know, clean food or looking at, you know, a healthy eater, I often use that. And you did even a Google image search, you're going to find someone who is young and white and blonde and in, you know, a body that's accepted by society and likely drinking a green smoothie and in a particular line of yoga wear that shows their affluence. That would come up. That's the image that we would see.
And conventionally probably gorgeous.
Right. Of what we accept,
right,
you know.
Right.
And then when we think of, you know, who are the images that come to mind in terms of body size, in terms of skin color, in terms of socioeconomic status, when you use language like garbage food, junk food, trash food, that type of thing. And do you, what is the subliminal message there of what you extend then to how you think about a person who looks in a particular way, who doesn't look like that conventional, you know, what we are all supposed to somehow aspire to. And that maybe not be on the surface, you know, but there is something there if I'm referring to food in a particular way. And it's difficult to get out because then there is, you know, well, I don't refer to food as good or bad, but then can I call it healthy or unhealthy? Can I call it nutritious or not nutritious? Like, where does the binary stop? And that's, what would it sound like if it was just food? Like, it all serves a purpose. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, I don't know, the Cheez-Its are a health food that we should live on, but boy, they're good. You know, but
Cheez-Its are Wheat Thins and I can't stop.
Yeah, but they have a place, right? They have a place, and they're, you know, when people talk about things like it has empty calories, well, that's like a oxymoron. You know, anything is providing caloric value, is providing energy. Now, is it providing nutrients? Probably not. But there still serves a purpose. You know, it may be that that's what's keeping someone full for a period of time, or that's what they have access to. So I think the language piece is a place to start, and we get it wrong because, you know, we say those words all the time. I just referred to the Environmental Working Dirty Dozen group as trash, but I stand by it.
We'll give
I stand
you
by it.
You mentioned in the conversation around fast food, I want to go back. I'm thinking of a really specific story, and I cannot for the life of me remember if this is a story a guest shared with me, if it's a story a mom told me, but related to fast food and related to language mattering and also like context mattering, I think, around elitism. I was in a conversation with someone at some point and they were talking about fast food and how they felt like a bad parent because they stopped and got their kid fast food a lot in the evenings because it was what they could get between driving two kids to multiple practices. And there was a lot of guilt around it for a long period of time. And then they started realizing, oh, wait, this is how our family gets to eat dinner together, that we get our fast food in a drive-through and then we sit in our car and we eat. And it is like our 20 minutes of being together as a family that would never otherwise be able to happen because we have two kids in activities most nights of the week. Mm-hmm. And that reframe goes from what could be like, you give your kids fast food multiple times a week to, oh my gosh, you make sure that your family gets quality time together multiple nights a week by finding a way that's where you can efficiently get food in their mouths.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a great example. That's a great example. And the reframe of that is wonderful because that's what works. And it isn't necessarily a judgment on things.
Right.
You gave a great example. I don't even remember now, but I heard the two words, Trader Joe's and Whole Foods, right? That's part of it. And I think those two, and I was a huge fan of Trader Joe's, you know, I'll just lead with that. Those two stores I find really interesting because there is a level of, I want to say, like a status to those particular stores, maybe Whole Foods more so than Trader Joe's, but there's something about that because of that status that suddenly everything in there becomes like a health food as a result.
Yes.
You know, like everything, because I buy my dark chocolate caramels from Trader Joe's, they're somehow better than the ones like that made it a health food, you know, to use that language,
totally,
compared to if I bought it at the grocery store. You know, like there are plenty of things like that amazing orange chicken that everybody gets all the time, right? That's just basically fried chicken fat and it's delicious. But like suddenly because you purchased it from the frozen food aisle in this status-based store, it elevates it.
Totally.
Which is what's interesting, I think, about how we talk about things.
Yes, I totally agree. And it's so funny because it's like a moment in culture that we put a definition around it. And it's like, it's all kind of made up.
Yeah. And it's funny with language too. Like I'm thinking about a big thing right now I see a lot in food spaces and conversations is processed foods and how, you know, we have to eliminate all these processed foods. And then in the next sentence, it's like, and buy my greens powder. And I'm thinking, how do you think the greens got to be a powder?
Yeah.
They were processed. You know, like they didn't just
Totally.
magically disintegrate. You know, like what is the process you did to those green vegetables in terms of stripping them down and dehydrating and put them through enzymatic reactions? Like, how did that become that powder? It had to have been highly processed to do that, but like it's a different, you know, we don't, that cognitive dissonance gets lost in what we see as processed or not processed, which I just have found very interesting.
I think one of the dangers too, when we get caught up in this judgment, whether we're judging ourselves or the people around us, is that we completely overlook, going back to people who don't have access, we completely overlook people that don't have access in a variety of ways. And where I think this is especially concerning is our kids hearing these conversations. And so if I'm talking about food in a certain way, and that it needs that, like, food and nutrition looks like this and not that, what message am I sending to my kid about another child in our community who doesn't have the same access and who is bringing something else to school because that's what their family has, you know, that's what either they can afford or that's what's in their neighborhood that they can buy on the way to school or whatever the situation might be. And I think that that piece is really important too, that we are acknowledging, like, we have to take ownership for, of course, we want to raise healthy kids, but not the fixation on health is so elitist and snobby and like high upper echelon that, like, it's excluding everyone in our, or, you know, other kids in our community.
Yeah, there are two parts to that that I would talk about, because it made me think, as you were saying, those examples just in terms of access is some of the research in that area and seeing, you know, when you're looking at food pantries and food banks and places like that, and finding that, you know, folks who were utilizing those services and maybe were not taking some of the fresh, you know, fruits and vegetables and things that were available as part of the services provided. And so the messaging, you know, if you're kind of standing on your soapbox and looking down or saying, you know, quote unquote, poor people don't like fruits and vegetables. They're going to take this, you know, boxed food and whatever. But what does it, when you ask people, why were they not taking those things? Well, some of the answers were they're really heavy, and I have a long way to walk, and I got to hold these two kids' hands, and it's much easier to hold like the light boxed food that is there than to carry a watermelon. You know, like that's great, but like, or I'm on public transportation, or I have all these places where it's like not actually physically, I'm not able to carry that and make sure my child doesn't run into the street, and. The other piece, which is even more disheartening to me to the messaging, and there was actually a research study published about this, is so much so that folks are heard so much about pesticides and how you, if you're going to eat fruits and vegetables, they have to eat organic, that the message becomes, if I can't afford organic, I'm not going to eat any of that at all
So,
because I can't
yes.
run the risk of getting sick and I don't have health care. And so I'm not even going to take a chance and I'm going to let those go. And like, as a nutrition professional, that moment is just like, oh, we have lost our minds now,
And
you know?
that's the moment I had a moment like that with the berries, where I was like, well, like if they're $8, maybe he just shouldn't eat berries while my husband's laid off. So he just shouldn't have berries for like 8 months. I mean, we're 8 months into this point. So, and then I was like, that's, I had like this whole loop where I was like, this train of thought is so ridiculous. Like, it's one of like the seven things he'll actually eat, but I'm going to be like, nope, we can't get it organic. You're just not going to have it at all. And yeah, so we've bought a lot of non-organic raspberries in recent months.
It's just, it's interesting though what that messaging over time does have an impact, you know, to folks who just don't want to even take that chance. And that's a sad, you know, piece that I don't know, that we have to reckon with what our messaging is. But some of the, of what you were talking about, of like, what is the messaging that it says to kid, it just, to kids, it just brought up to me thinking about, and I know folks push back on this idea a lot, but there is a lot of, we're talking about food elitism, but a lot of healthism as well, you know, where it
That's where I
is.
wanted to go next.
Yeah. Oh,
But
see,
keep
we are
going.
speaking the same language.
Keep
No, there's
going.
this push of, you know, your pursuit of your health is your moral obligation. And to not, when you push up against that and say that isn't the case, you know, people hate that. Oh, they don't like that. That's no, no. You get a lot of pushback with that. And I think, you know, a lot of that really resides in who we are, at least in the United States as a culture, you know, and our very puritanical roots and that connection to religion in a lot of ways. And of course, you need to, you know, be the healthiest you can be. The whole my body is a temple, which biblical scholars would never relate to your actual physical body. It's about the body of Christ, but that's a whole other conversation. You know, people are like, my body is a temple. Like, that's not what that means, but okay. You do you. That's, right. You know, that's not that part. But that kind of language is then, of course, you should be pursuing that. You know, that should be, yeah. And if you don't pursue wellness, then you're going to deal with illness. And like, to that point of access, that isn't everyone's priority. And again, yeah. If you love to be active and you love to prep your and do the, you know, spend time creating these meals and it's, you know, get your sleep, that's all wonderful. And I am 100% you should, you know, do those things. But keeping in mind that that isn't everybody's experience, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And so if you are working, you know, several jobs and you have a long commute in order to do those things and it's not safe in your neighborhood to go for a walk at night, let alone at all, and your a gym membership is laughable and like all of those things, that is not someone's first priority, you know?
Right.
And yes, can you do the best with what you have? Of course you can. But my judgment to say you should make it your priority because it is mine just really falls flat to me.
Mm-hmm. And be really leery of anyone who works in health services, which is a very broad spectrum. And I could even put health in air quotes for some of those people who pushes you to believe that something that is not easily accessible to you or so that their services, for example, like their very expensive services are the right thing for you. And
yeah.
This came up for me years ago. I was part of this networking group. There was a chiropractor in the group. I went to the chiropractor, really liked him. Of course, he checked out my back and told me that there was a million things wrong with it because I think every chiropractor would say that. And I'm someone who's had a lot of benefits from chiropractic, so I'm not going to bash
right.
the industry. But
yeah.
So he says, okay, there's all these things wrong with your back. So it makes sense for you to come in 3 times a week. Here's what this looks like. Here's the payment plan, blah, blah, blah. Like before I could even like take a breath and think like to ask if I could think this through, I was like, here's my card, 3 days a week. Let's get it scheduled. So then the next appointment, he's like, so I want to ask, like, do you have any friends or family members who you think could benefit from chiropractic? And I was like, oh, well, you know what? Now that, and this is why I'm still a personal trainer. So I'm like, I do have some clients that have, like, so I give one of my clients' names and I don't think I gave her, I think I asked like, hey, can I give you your contact information? It's someone who I had a working relationship with outside
yeah.
of her trainer as well. So I put them in touch and then I think I brought my husband as well. So there's these like info nights that he has like once a month or something. So we go to this info night and the info night is all about the health of your spine. And then it turns into at the end of the whole thing, enrolling your significant other. And for me, also this client into like basically the same 3-day a week, pass over your credit card. Let's get it all signed up and everything. So the woman who I brought her boyfriend and he was like, he didn't have a job or insurance. And so when he gets this recommendation, he's like, well, thank you. But like, I can't sign up for any of that. And the chiropractor looks at him and he goes, well, your girlfriend obviously cares a lot about her health because she's doing it. So do you not care about your health? And I just wanted to, I was like, oh my God, I like blew my professionalism by inviting these people. I feel horrible. I don't ever want to come back here. I don't want anyone I know to come back here. Like I will never refer here because it was so uncomfortable and so inappropriate. And that's healthism for you.
Well, and that it is healthism. And it also, I think, I guess to really get into it, it does promote a message of personal responsibility, that your health is your personal responsibility.
Right.
And what that does is then lets off the hook systemic problems, right?
Oh because, my gosh, you just built the bridge. Go ahead. I'm bringing up Aubrey Gordon in a minute. But
oh,
go
okay.
Ahead.
Wonderful. Yeah. So if you have, you know, what we well, often doesn't, you know, get looked at a lot when we talk about health is we're always diet and exercise is everything. And maybe sleep and like a little bit of mental health sprinkled on top in more recent years. But we don't ever look at like social determinants of health. And, you know, our movement and our exercise is truly such a small percentage, you know, like depending on the research you're looking at, you know, 25 to 35%. And so much of it is, you know, your socioeconomic status and your education level and the environment you work in. I mean, in terms of like air quality, like all of these things have such an impact that doesn't get taken into place. So if you really put, you know, your health is your personal responsibility. That doesn't mean, again, the nuance. Of course, you could be doing things to better your health if that is your priority.
Right.
But it takes away all of this background that then folks would have to step up and actually create change And so there is an interesting political divide there when you see who are the voices who are saying health is a personal responsibility are often the same folks who are not concerned about social issues that impact other people, at least has been my experience. So that's an interesting, you know, thing to think about.
Yeah.
Because again, you can still be making those choices for yourself, but you have to recognize that there are so many things that have an impact on health beyond, you know, what you can personally account for. And then it also leaves out folks who are dealing with chronic illness, mm-hmm. who will never achieve whatever this quote unquote optimized health is,
right.
just by the nature of, you know, how they are, you know, show up in the world.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. Like they might never be able to lift weights 3 days a week and do cardio for an hour 3 days a week. Like that's not.
Yeah. And that, well, and maybe they just need to do their steps and not their HIIT workouts, but I know you have things to say about that.
Totally.
Oh, oh that was a fantastic rant. I was like, yes.
Oh my gosh. If you don't know what Amy's talking about, I did an Instagram reel about fitness influencers. That's near
so
the top
good.
Of my, it's one of my most recent reels whenever this interview comes out. I never do reels, so it will remain at the top of my reels for a while. This episode is supported by EarnIn. Life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn now can be in your hands today with EarnIn. EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Super, super easy to use. You just download the EarnIn app and verify your paycheck. Then you can access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. So the app is free. You can leave a tip if you want. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. So here's the thing. Sometimes getting close to your next paycheck, next pay period, and you realize, oh gosh, like paycheck doesn't come until next Friday, but we have this event that we need to attend this weekend and we need money for it. Or we have to buy a gift for someone. Or, oh my gosh, like my kid tore through their shoes and now we have to buy new shoes this weekend and the money's not in the bank yet. So EarnIn can help you access the money you've already earned at work by giving you this little bit of money in advance. So make EarnIn part of your financial routine and join EarnIn's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about EarnIn, I think about financial stability and security, and it gives me a lot of peace of mind. So for our listeners, all you need to do is download EarnIn today. It's spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, and you can download it in Google Play or the Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in Shameless Mom under podcast when you sign up. So there'll be a little place where you can, where it says, what podcast did you hear about them on? Type in Shameless Mom under podcast. This helps to show support for our show and our advertisers. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank, and subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. This episode is supported by Nutrafol. Did you know that hair thinning will happen to approximately 1 in 2 women? If you're among them, you are not alone. Thinning hair is normal, but it's not openly talked about, so it can feel lonely and frustrating and sometimes even embarrassing when you're going through it yourself. Join the over 1 million people who are doing something about their thinning hair with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. Oh my gosh, I am a heavy shedder. So if you are a heavy shedder, or if you are someone who's wanting to thicken your hair, I definitely want you to try out Nutrafol. I have loved using it myself, and I know multiple other people who've used it and have found great results. While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for 6 months. To get started, you can take their hair quiz on Nutrafol.com, which will give you a personalized health plan based on your special root causes. Nutrafol is committed to helping you identify root causes of any shedding or hair loss so that you can really start to rebuild healthy hair in a way that is customized to you. So take the first steps to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code SHAMELESS. Find out why 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Go to Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code SHAMELESS. Nutrafol.com, code SHAMELESS. So I wanted to, we, on our last interview, I remember we had a moment for Aubrey Gordon, who is the author of What We Don't Talk About When We Talk About Fat. She also wrote the book, You Just Need to Lose Weight. Mm-hmm. She also is co-host of the podcast Maintenance Phase. And then she recently released her documentary about mm-hmm. people living in fat bodies called Your Fat Friend. And I'm here, like she's, well, she was on the show as well, but she's absolutely incredible. She was talking about something with on Maintenance Phase recently, and I stopped and I was listening during my workout. I stopped my workout and I pulled out my phone, which I'm holding in front of me now. And I wrote this down because I was like, this is for Amy. So she said, and I think it was on their Patreon. I don't know if you listen to their Patreon.
Okay.
She said, she said the current wellness culture is diet culture plus classism plus racism. So when you mention systemic stuff,
yes,
this is what we're like, this is what we're looking at. And so I think that really thinking through our own biases and our opinions and our judgments and where some of that might, where we might have some internalized biases that we might need to check is looking at this optimization of health and the morality of health is part of supremacy culture. Mm-hmm. And when we can see that, I think it, for me, it can really help me check my values around how I want to talk about it, health and nutrition and wellness, and how I want to talk about it with my kid, like how I want to show up and take care of my health in ways that maybe I hadn't previously considered, or frame it in ways that I hadn't previously considered, when I'm able to really see how it operates amongst social systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great, I'm glad you shared that, because that is a great way to explain that this plus this plus this is definitely a big part of it. And I think, you know, just from the food standpoint, even how we make from a governing body or the things that we learn as dietitians or the messaging that we have is very whitewashed, for lack of a better word, in terms of our messaging. So when we used to have our pyramids for how long for food, when we change that into the My Plate, you know, the USDA's My Plate system, I look at that across who eats that way. Like it takes away so many dishes that are not, here is the meat, and then here is the potato, and here is the vegetable, and here's the glass of milk on the side. Like how many cultures are eating in so many different ways that you kind of lose that if you're using that as a focal point for education about nutrition. You know, what part of that conversation is just not happening? And we see that, you know, within textbooks and like what foods are represented, and how are you talking about if you were purchasing educational materials for people? You can get the general package, and then you can get, you know, this specified group of people's ethnic food as like an ancillary part. It's an add-on, and it's not, you know, part of like the norm, for lack of a better word. And that is a challenge. And, you know, recommendations are problematic with that. And one of the examples, I don't know if I talked about this last time when I was here, is rice. Rice is a great example of where we get into this like elitism and classism and racism and all of it across the culture, because you say things like, you know, if you were asking folks, they would say, well, you have to have brown rice. You know, because brown rice is healthy and it has the fiber and you have to have that. And when you look across many cultures, who willingly eats brown rice? Like, no.
And I do like that it's a little crunchy.
And that's great.
I hear you. I hear you.
But to work with folks and have that be the first go-to to say, well, you really need to change your white rice to brown rice.
Yeah.
That's the moment to walk out. Because what I find interesting is the approach a lot of times in a nutrition space of like knowing better than what people are doing for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I find it interesting, especially if you look across cultures that base white rice as a foundational staple carbohydrate. Those are cultures that tend to eat a lot more vegetables in general, in stir fries, in dishes, and all kinds of things. And you are going to tell these folks that they need to swap that out for brown rice for fiber? Really? Like, they're getting way away. The average American's getting like 11 grams of fiber a day. So it's just absurd. But we do, that's where some of that also comes in, I think, in the nutrition space, which is a predominantly white woman space, you know, professionally, with all of its own problems.
Yeah.
To make those kind of recommendations, to not understand, you know, that people have particular foods for a variety of reasons, and to make those kind of swaps is really like, there's a lot of layers as to why are we saying you need to eat a particular way and not eat a particular way.
Yeah. Yeah. We changed brown rice, which we had just been getting forever and ever, to white rice because my child will actually eat it if I make white rice. And again, like back to fed is best. I kind of had this like, I was putting the brown rice on his plate for years. He would never touch it. Sometimes he would maybe take a bite. And then I think Trader Joe's was out of brown rice at one point, and so I got the white rice. And he was like, oh, this is so much better. And had a moment like, am I a bad mom if I just give him the white rice? And now I'm like, how much white rice would you like? Like 5 cups? Great. Like 5 cups to go with your non-organic raspberries? Fantastic. Because it's food he will eat.
Right. And he's getting the fiber in his raspberries, right? So do you have to get it from the rice? It's like thinking about if we're looking at our diets, as a pattern of how we eat and not necessarily, what every isolated food and what it could, how it can cure us and how it can kill us, and rather seeing it as a whole pattern of things, it makes such a difference.
We're getting close on time already, and I don't want it to be over. I want to ask you if you can leave us with something to help us be more discerning. So my question is, how can we start to be more critical thinkers about health and wellness instead of sponges? I think when we're sponges, we are often absorbing just whatever happens to be happening around us, whatever messages happen to be floating around us, which can, it's like whatever is most popular on social media at any given moment. And there's so much danger in that. How can we become better critical thinkers to look into, like, where is this information coming from? And is it really based in like science, or is it because of a lobby group of lobbyists? And how can we dig deeper to uncover our own biases and then also give ourselves the freedom to nourish ourselves in ways that are aligned with where we're at in the world, what we need in the world, and also in ways that create safer spaces for other people to do the same?
Well, that's a small question.
I know, I
Thanks.
don't like, I'm not good with small
We
questions.
started big and we're ending big. There was a lot packed in there. I would say one thing, I think to a place to start was the language you used around biases and thinking about when you are making a particular food choice to think about, why am I making that choice? And that could be a place to start, even if it's just in the grocery store or at the farmer's market or wherever you might be. And you gave some good examples about that. Like, why am I choosing these raspberries over these raspberries? What does that even mean? And what's the goal here? I mean, I'm just going to use the example you've given because it's a really good one to say, well, ultimately, I want my child to continue to eat berries because he enjoys them. And so we are also looking at things economically different. And so now I'm going to make this particular choice, and knowing that the end goal is the child ate the raspberries. And so you met the goal. The child ate. The goal was met. And so in that way, I would see that, as, a quote, good job on that end. Like, you got to the goal and how you got there based on the means that you have. And I think when you have that kind of discernment and grace for yourself, you can then begin to have it for other people. Sometimes it's difficult to start outward and go inward. That's a great way to do it if you can, if you're, evolved enough to be looking at it in that way. But sometimes you have to look at it for yourself and kind of have that moment of like the person who was going to the McDonald's drive-through. Like, that reframe is another piece of, okay, what is the positive out of this? Like, what or where am I getting that? The bigger question, though, is talking about like how are you tuning out all the noise and tuning into yourself in a lot of ways. And it's funny, like full circle talking about priorities. That's another reason with the membership group that I was putting together was for that very reason. Like, how do you tune all that stuff out and actually like literally tune into yourself in terms of hunger and fullness? But having a more critical eye about, who really benefits from this messaging. And there always is a benefit on some end. And maybe you align with that, particular benefit, and that makes sense. But even to the extent of, I don't know, your favorite influencer talking about something, does that lead to the supplement line that they're selling? Does that lead to the book that they're promoting? Does that lead to, like, it's usually not just for the sake of, I'm going to put this particular information out there. Like, what is it on this social, the new latest Netflix documentary? What is it about this person's post? Like, all of that is there for a reason, and I'm not against that. I'm here talking about the membership that I'm going to have, so I don't have that problem, but there typically is a benefit. And when it comes to food, the grift is there. It just is. And what's hard, I think, for like everyday people in this background is the utilization now, unfortunately, of credentials. And there are a lot of folks who utilize the credentials that they have because that does give them the platform in some ways to say things. And I think an important piece for people is thinking about if someone has a particular credential, are the things that they're talking about in alignment with what their training is? You know, mm-hmm. And so, you know, I utilize the term doctor because I have a PhD. Right. I am not a medical doctor. I am not an immunologist. I am not like, you know, do I understand how some things work? Yes, but that is not my area of expertise. And I think that's where we see a lot, particularly people who use that language, whether they're chiropractors using doctors, whether they are medical doctors who are suddenly an expert in everything.
Like, you're not trying to cure cancer with food because you're because you have a PhD. Like, that you
correct.
Know that, you know the boundary, you know the line.
Yeah.
People don't know that line.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. And so then you can leverage the fact that you have this title. And so then language will say, and I don't know, I could give a lot of specific examples of the ones that get on my nerves, but I won't. But you know, you have people who are affiliated, let's say, with like prestigious universities who have the doctor who suddenly are an expert in all these things. And it's like, no, you're a scientist in this one area and you should be speaking to that because that's your expertise, but you are not all these things. And yeah. I think that is where, in my opinion, at least I see a lot of medical doctors really go down a nutrition road and that is not their area. Unless you are specifically like an endocrinologist, then you want to talk about hormone health or you have these areas. But when you just are like MD general, maybe not so much. So then that's the spot where I'm not saying that's not good information in all cases, but that's the moment to have a bit of discernment to be like, I wonder what's the benefit here to have that messaging go in this particular direction. And if it's usually surrounding about fear, that to me is a red flag.
Yes.
Anything where you need to be afraid of this and you're meant to feel fearful, because fearful is a great motivator for you to spend your money.
Yes. Yes.
Fear and shame are great motivators. You're a terrible mom if you do this. This is going to happen to your child if you do this. This is going to happen to you. Like, that isn't the way, versus you don't usually see the marketing around those things. Like, if you do this, you'll feel better. You'll do this. You'll do, you know, it's often about what's going to happen to you poorly if you don't, you know, make this change. So.
Right. Oh, so good. Amy, how are you currently showing up shamelessly?
I will pat myself on the back.
Say, oh, please do.
I will say showing up is a big thing that I have been, I think, shamelessly in doing those things, especially social media has been like a barrier spot for me. If someone's like looking at my social media, I was very much against the reels for the longest time. I don't mind talking on camera and like doing a live
You're
kind so of thing.
Good at it.
I love a good carousel, but the reels were like, okay, that's more image wise. And this is where like, we're all in the culture. We're all in the culture of knowing, like, as I gave that example of what is the picture of health, if we did the Google image search, and I'm not most of those things, you know, as I feel myself like approaching 50 this year and changes in body sizes and like all of those things. And then to have a label as a dietitian with a doctorate in nutrition, there's an expectation of if I'm going to put myself physically out there, what that should look like. And it took a long time. Maybe your 40s do that to you, but like, I'm over it. And so I have found that the message is more important than the messenger in a lot of ways. And so how that looks, and it's, I mean, social media is a ruthless place in some spots where people have a whole lot to say about how you show up in the world. And so I think that I held myself back from that for a long time. And now I just don't care. The message is more important and I'd rather say it and let people 100%. Have their own opinion.
And I also think there's people that feel safety and like that they feel cared for because you're showing up as you and they want that. And I know that I had this when I was a personal trainer and people were like, you're the personal trainer who doesn't have a six pack. And I was like, oh my God, that's like my biggest insecurity in life is that I'm a personal trainer who doesn't have a six pack. And they were like, we're so glad you're a trainer who doesn't have a six pack. Like they're like, we want the trainer who's just like the real person, not the person who's like parading her six pack all around. It was so helpful to me because I was like, oh my gosh, you just took the thing that I spend so much time worrying about right off my plate.
And that's a great point because there's some people who view I mean, in both of those industries, like your body is not your business card, in my opinion. You know, you can be very knowledgeable about the things that you do, and that doesn't necessarily have to show up in your physical appearance.
Right.
So, and I know people disagree with that and see that as aspirational, and that is their
Most of the people that disagree with that are 30 to 40 year old white men. But anyway.
not listening to the show.
Right. I was in large circles of them for 15 years in the fitness industry.
Yes.
And that was a constant conversation about bodies being business cards. Okay. We'll do a whole other hour about that sometime. Amy, where can people find with you and connect with you and get information about the membership community?
Yeah, I am most active on Instagram, which is dr.amyporto. There is information, you know, in the links there in my bio about the Eat Better Club, but also on my website, which is my first and last name, amyporto.com.
Perfect. We will link everything up in the show notes. People can go to shamelessmom.com and check out the episode with Dr. Amy Porto. There's two of them. So there's one that's going to be in the 800s, and then there'll be another one that's in the 700s of episodes. So people can just scroll their way through. Amy, this was so fabulous. Come back anytime. Anytime you have something to talk about, something to promote, because you're not a creepy promoter. You're not a fearmonger promoter. So you're always, always welcome here.
I always appreciate the invitation, and it's always so much fun talking with you.
Thanks, Amy. Thank you so much for joining me in the Shameless Mom Academy today. I really, really appreciate you being here, and I hope you learned something new. As always, this conversation will be continued over in our free private Facebook group. You can join that group by going to shamelessmom.com/Facebook to connect with other shameless moms just like you. Additionally, if this is your first time listening to the show, know that we are here every Monday and Wednesday with a brand new episode. So make sure you subscribe. Go to whatever podcast app you use and subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. You can do that directly if you go to shamelessmom.com/review. That will put you in Apple Podcasts, where you can click on the subscribe button, and you can also leave a review. If you scroll down a little bit, you can leave a 5-star review. You can write a few sentences letting me know what you thought about the show. If you let me know how the show has impacted you in becoming a more shameless mom, you might be nominated to be Shameless Mom of the Week. Also, please share this episode. My goal is to help more mamas be more shameless every damn day. So please do share this episode. You can take a screenshot of the episode on your phone and then share it out on social media. Tag me at the Shameless Mom Academy on Facebook or Instagram. I'm quick to reply and eager to send you Facebook love and love to be connected to all of you. So again, thank you for being here. I can't wait to be back here again with you in just a couple days. And until then, no matter what you do today, make sure you do it shamelessly.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model. So that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun. So check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.